and I'm going to hand over to Rajesh to chair the next part of the discussion.
Thank you, Mike. The dream of 2030 that all of us have articulated has a follow-up question, which is that, you know, what are the priority areas of our engagement? Given that the focus we want to have is greater support to social justice, to inclusion of the of those who are currently being excluded from active economic and social participation in our societies. And you know, I was thinking of this in the context of what the draft communique already acknowledges, that between the time we met in September last year and now, there have been some dramatic changes around the world in terms of the young people and other citizens voicing their discomfort with the way things are going. And this voicing, for the first time, is global. It is happening here in UK, as it is happening in Occupy the Wall Street yesterday on 15th October. Some 900 cities saw simultaneous protests. It is not that these people were providing an alternative, but they were certainly telling us that they don't like what's going on. And therefore, if we have to, you know, contribute, if we have to visualize a way by which community engagement by institutions of higher education could privilege the focus on the issues of inclusion and social justice, because they are no longer bottom billion alone. It seems like other than the 1%, it's the rest of the 6 billion who are upset in different parts of the world today. So what kinds of things, what kinds of areas of action, what kinds of issues, what kinds of, you know, sort of emerging or already existing concerns, this work that our networks represent could meaningfully focus upon, is the second question. And several of you have already made very meaningful contributions, which are included. But in light of our conversation question one just a few moments ago, I'm sure we all have new ideas which are more concrete and more meaningful. So let me start by inviting Susan. Once again, you have been listening to this, to make your comments, and I'll invite others one by one.
Well, thank you very much. This is a really important question, and it doesn't have an easy answer because just social justice issues, just all of our resources could be towards both intellectual capital and other kinds of capital. I think I mentioned that from the Talwar Network perspective, we've had the opportunity to work with around two specific issues that we believe fit in this social justice broadly defined set of priorities. One is around economic empowerment of marginalized young people, particularly in Africa, but in other parts of the world as well. And I hope that as our agenda develops, I keep saying it's not just about economic empowerment. If we're really going to figure out ways in which universities can help with the inclusion of marginalized people in mainstream societies, it has to be given skills that will help them with employment. But we also should feel a responsibility for the development of their civic skills. So that's one one particular specific issue, and the other is one that we're working in Chile and South Africa on around inclusion of girls and women in the communities in which our universities operate. So, I mean, it's an embarrassment of riches, so to speak, in terms of, you know, the kinds of issues that we could all work on. I suppose one question would be, as a network, are we sharing information, or are we simply sharing information, or are there opportunities to actually work on some of these as our agenda develops down the line?
Thank you, Susan. May I invite Liam?
Yes. Hello. It's a fascinating question. How, I think, when you begin to take a term like social justice, and you begin to try to draw out what it connects to, you realize it connects to absolutely everything that that can happen in university, and that can happen in the way in which engagement works. I mean, we've been trying to think of it from our point of view. A lot of the work that we do, as I've said before, takes place in lower income countries and middle income countries. And so we have this sort of this development association with a lot of what university community engagement is. And so it calls me to kind of think about how we look at development in the first case. And of course, we're coming up to not too distant future, 2015, when the target date for Millennium Development Goals was to have been met. And if you look at all of those goals, each one, I think, represents a whole world of humanitarian needs. Many of them don't actually explicitly refer to social justice and to the civic kind of skills that Susan talked about. And I thought, well, that's one thing that maybe has been missing from the development context in the past, is that there isn't as great a focus on the capacity building of civil society. It's been more addressing what are severe problems and addressing those problems, and maybe a little bit too targeted, micro-targeted. And so we thought, wouldn't it be good after 2015, once the international community kind of sits down and begins to think about what went right and what still needs to be addressed in terms of international development, a greater recognition of how conflict itself, I mean, it can be talked about in a security context as well. A lot of the conflict and the things we've seen happen around the world happen because there is social injustice, because there isn't the capacity for democratic breath to really happen in the society. And where it happens is at universities. There's no coincidence that many demonstrations and movements begin with students in universities, because they are in the position, they're fortunate enough to be in a position to actually engage with these ideas, to begin to explore different ways they would like their societies to look, and that becomes an engine for new ideas. And if the rest of society is not, if that's not, that space isn't really there, because there's an authoritarian system in place, and there are development challenges and economic challenges as well, then communicating what is causing outrage, what's causing real a desire for change in one institution, how do we really make the connection and make sure that it isn't only happening in universities, that it's happening everywhere. People are taking hold of their own fate, and I think that's something that needs to be looked at in a development context as well, which is something, again, I think as that higher education needs to be brought into the development process as well. So really, I think blending together some of the aspects of social justice with a development process that has been humanitarian focused, but has not been as focused on capacity building and civil society and higher education. So I think bringing those three areas together would be important, rather than micro-targeting different areas. So it is more of an integrated synthesis, I suppose, but
Thank you. Thank you, Liam. Hank, may I invite you?
Yeah, well, I agree with what was said, but I would not focus on certain topics or disciplines. But the basis of my work for the past 25 years has been that we want to level the playing field. Like normally, industry can hire researchers, government can hire researchers, and the science shops and similar are all about giving access to research support to those who could otherwise not afford it. And in itself, that creates a form of social justice. So I think we're just going to continue on that way. And by doing so, if you give access to the support that university can offer to develop your knowledge further, to share knowledge, then you give people more power to take control of their own life. And that resonates with what the previous speaker was saying. So I think that's my mission. And I'm not going to limit to one of the Millennium Goals or one of the scientific disciplines, but I see this as a mechanism to empower people and to do what we can to help them shape their own lives. Thank you.
Excellent, Hank. Thanks, Norbert.
Yes, what can I add to this? It's about empowering people, as Hank said, and as he previously said, we're thinking of learning networks. So we're talking of having no longer ivory towers, no more having content hermits. So it's cooperating, sharing knowledge within the disciplines, but also interdisciplinary. It's giving access to knowledge, sharing knowledge which is created in different levels, within different societal groups, within different regions, and yes, by this, giving the people the power to work on their issues themselves with support. This is a skill building which is goes much further than just education in higher educational institute. Thank you.
Thank you, Christina and Hoyes.
Thank you. We agree with all the ideas that have been said in this second round, and we support all them. But we think that there is a main issue that perhaps involves all the ideas that have been said, but goes beyond them. Because under our point of view, we are in a historical moment in the world, and we are in the midst of rethink all our society. We think that we are in front of a deep transformation in all areas of social activity, mainly in all the issues related to how we are organizing our collectivity in all levels. I mean a political level, a political issue, how we organize our collectivity and our economic model. We think that we are at the end of an era and we need to create a new form of living together in the world under a view of sustainable future. For us, we in need of knowledge transfer is related of how we rethink together in the world. It includes all the issues that have been mentioned. But it gives another point of view. We can't think in a continuity that we have to do better this thing or this other. We think that we are in front of a real change, deep change, that needs a new basis. And this basis could be provided by knowledge.
Well, by knowledge and the way we create this knowledge in society, of course. And sector of how we can co-create knowledge with communities and other stakeholders like economic sectors, cultural sector, NGOs, on the industrial partners and neighbor associations. So that's what we can leave it here. Do you want to add something? Okay.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Bud and Leslie, colleagues from the University of Victoria.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I must say it's extremely inspiring to hear all of you and to feel this kind of energy and to feel, in a way, you know, a kind of... Even if I might say so, as you know, I'm a poet, a bit passionate kind of responses. I find it very moving. I would say I very much support all of the individual suggestions and the spirit of Christina and Jesus. The Guni intervention, I think, has captured the moment very well. In order to move forward to address the moment, I see three things. I think that we need to continue to work on conceptual tools. These are the intellectual foundations on how to speak about what we mean. And so I'm attracted to ideas like cognitive justice, knowledge democracy, and to the idea that people like Boaventura de Santos de Sousa have said is that there will be no cognitive justice in the world until there will be no social justice in the world until there is cognitive justice. So that reinforces what several of you have said and what Christina has I think, captured very eloquently, is that knowledge and the linkage of knowledge to questions of inequality and democracy, I think is strategically, we are at a key moment. Now, we have to address the question of, and I think it was David who said, I would like to see a broader range of partners. Pepe Jose Blanes has responded to our draft in a very supportive and important way in saying something similar. He says there are so many people working outside of universities who have so much to contribute. And many of them are speaking in languages other than English. So I think we need to somehow, find a way in a practical way, to broaden the base of engagement in this question, in these conversations. The third area for where we could be working is an area, I forget who it is that was suggesting, maybe Rajesh, but this idea of, I can't remember who it was, but the idea of new institutions. We need to support, and we have amongst us the capacity to support new kinds of institutions that break the, as my colleague Leslie said, that break the dichotomy or the dualism between community and university. But there are new forms of knowledge institutions that work at the intellectual level that we associate with universities, but are attached to the practical and kind of social movement orientation of community organizations. And PREA perhaps comes closest to moving in that direction, and I think that the Bonn Science Shop is also moving in that direction. These are new kinds of things that we need more of these. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mike. David.
Hi, thank you. I'll just reflect a little bit. For me, I'm a really big fan of someone's work you may know, Daniela Meadows. And she talked in one of her papers about ways to intervene in a system. And she said that the most significant way to intervene in a system is through the ideas of the system. If you want to create change, it's all about ideas. And I think that really sort of brings me to Christina's points from Guni, and I agree wholeheartedly with what you guys have said. And in some ways, I think there's parts of society that are leading the way in this kind of knowledge creation, and they're not always universities. There's parts of universities that are working in this kind of collaborative vision that you kind of put forward there, but those parts aren't necessarily mainstream, whereas I think in some of our communities we have groups forming that form around those kinds of values, and it's very much the idea of today. It's kind of we feel that some of the challenges of the future are so complex in that sense that we need to be responsive, and hence for those reasons, we need these kinds of flat, non-hierarchical structures where we can work collaboratively to create knowledge. And I think that's also at the heart of all of this. Then the only other thing, really, to reflect on in terms of moving forward is to zoom in a bit. And I've been doing some work on assessing student learning from public engagement and looking really deeply into, well, what are the core principles that students will need in order to face the challenges of the future through engagement. And for me, I mean, the work that we've done there kind of synthesizes it into five areas, and we talked a bit about young people, so I think this might be relevant, but essentially we want to build the capacity for young people to manage complexity, you know, because it's all very well saying that people can take hold of their fate and, you know, all these kind of movements in the air. But, you know, as universities, we need to encourage people to be able to manage the complexity, manage multiple perspectives, et cetera, et cetera. Communication with groups that are other than yourself, reflective practice, awareness of self and others. And there's something there around knowledge creation and how we embed these values in the curriculum so that young people in undergraduate higher education, knowledge is created in this way, and it is a collaborative venture, and it's not just an academic who knows everything on the stool and disperses that knowledge. Sorry, I know I'm going on, so I'll just wrap up. In terms of ways to work in the future, I think the idea of social justice brings in the importance of different boundaries, and like Bud said, bringing in people from groups other than our own, new institutions, all of these people that are outside of this close network, no matter how difficult it might be to work with them initially, I think it's really important that we try, and I think there's a lot that can be learned from that moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Thank you very much. Let me invite Mike to say a few words on this question too as well.
It strikes me from listening to this conversation that there's much commonality between us. But one thing that I think that I want to emphasize, and certainly from the work that we've been doing in Pascal, is just the utter waste of resource in relation to what universities have to offer to their communities and what communities have to offer to their universities in terms of problem solving. And we've got massive economic, social, environmental problems, and yet there still is this amazing lack of communication and lack of willingness, particularly from the side of universities, in relation to make that contribution. So we have these people on the doorsteps of communities who can offer so much, yet aren't doing so. And I think and equally, of course, those communities themselves can offer a lot. What strikes me is, if and the question as posed is, what can we do as networks Well, I think perhaps one of the things we can do as networks is bring together our collective wisdom to come up with good cases around our different networks of where universities and communities are engaging successfully, but also come up with strong arguments as to why that is obviously a good thing, irrespective of the type of university, whether it be a research-intensive university with global ambitions, or whether it's a university that's working on a regional level. I think we really do have to come up with those arguments and convince people inside institutions that it's obviously beneficial to them as institutions to be engaged in this type of work. And if we can get if we can get ourselves moving in that direction, we will have been successful as a network of networks.
Thank you, Mike. Very, very thoughtful observation about what we could do collectively. Listening to all of you, I was visualizing a theme which is empowerment through knowledge at this moment of human history, where the future is not going to be an extension of the past. By engaging with those who are in the middle of these challenges and problems. One story that caught my imagination a couple of months ago, when a lot of people gathered around anti-corruption movement in India, you may have read about it, heard about it, was a sentiment where some of the people in the government and in the media asked these young people, people of all ages, what solution you have for government to implement so that corruption is weeded out. And they said, well, first of all, we are not running the government. So those who are running the government must take this responsibility. Secondly, the solution is not something that government alone can implement. Even if it came up with it, solution can be implemented only if all the citizens of the country believe that corruption has to be weeded out of society. So it's a collective enterprise, it's a societal enterprise, it's not a government enterprise. And I heard a similar echo in some of the media reports on Occupy Wall Street movement, where somebody who manages a billion of hedge funds said, oh, these guys are riffraff, ragtag collection of young people. They don't have an alternative vision. And when the reporter asked them that, their response was, no, we don't have an alternative, but we invite that hedge fund manager who's managing billions to come and have a discussion with us, what kind of alternative, so that we don't suffer, and his stock market also survives. And so I think it's a question of search for answers and alternatives, and bringing various knowledge systems and institutions together from higher education, from community and other parts of society in that collective search for answers to a new moment, a new phase, where multiple knowledges can be acknowledged and mutually respected. So, wonderful comments from many of you. Thank you very much for this intense response to question two. Much better than anything which has been written up so far. And I'm sure John has taken some copious notes, and we will come back to him with a few bullet points.